This is KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop. I used to get mad at my school. The teachers had taught me when cool. They're holding me down, turning me around, filling me up with your room. I have to admit, it's getting better, a little better, all the time. Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staten with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer, and I am looking forward to whatever conversation you have on the docket for us today.
Well, it's interesting that you say you're looking forward to it because I actually went.
What?
I traveled in time backwards to come up. Well, not literally. I went back in time to pick a topic for this week.
A golden oldie?
It's a golden oldie. It's a best of, greatest hits, whatever you want to call it.
Well, then why are we here? We just put on the repeat.
Let's
put up our shoes.
I think there's a reason why we're going to revisit this topic. So what I did was I went back and looked at the very first episode that we ever did almost 5 years ago in January of 2015.
How did we sound?
Younger. No, seriously, we did.
No, we did
yeah,
not.
Yeah, we did. I think people.
How could we sound?
I think people. I know my voice has deepened over the years.
How about now?
Well, okay.
How do I sound younger?
Well.
I sound older?
No, you sounded younger then.
As I'm saying, I sound older now.
Well, I thought it
was. So we were younger and wiser. Go ahead.
I don't know about wiser, because I think hopefully we're always getting wiser. We were wise. And that very first topic that we talked about, I think, is a very intriguing one. I thought it would be interesting to revisit it and see if your thinking has changed over the years or what you've learned about that in the past 5 years. So the topic was the importance of effective failure learning. That's always, you know, that's so charged for people, because as soon as you say failure, they freak out. Like, oh, no, I failed a class, or, oh, no, I botched that report at work, or, oh, no, I wrecked the car, whatever.
Sure.
And they assume failure equals bad.
Right.
And what we talked about was, you know, the important word is effective.
Right.
And learning from that and reevaluating. So remind people, first of all, what you mean by the importance of effective failure to learning.
Sure. First of all, and I could have guessed this probably because that's my favorite topic. So, of course, our first episode would be on this. But what coming at it now so many years later, effective failure, what that really means is not the act of failing, but it's what happens next. And this is what I think I have a greater clarity toward than I did even 5 years ago when I had a higher pitched voice. And that is that it's not the mistake, it's what comes next. And if you make a mistake and say, well, that didn't work, I'm going to try something else, that's tenacity, which is fantastic, and perseverance, which is wonderful, but it's not effective failure. Effective failure is much more mindful. It's stopping, and it's holding that attempt that didn't work, and instead of doing the cultural norm, which is to pretend it didn't happen, to sweep it under the rug, and, you know, I'm perfect, instead of focusing on perfection, focus on the process. And in this case, you hold that failed attempt in your mind until you have an epiphany, until you have an insight, until you see something that was there but you hadn't seen before. And then you can dismiss it, let it go, and do something else. This is so hard for everyone, especially students. So in my class, we tout effective failure all the time.
Do you tout it? Like,
well,
how
first
do
of
you...
all, I grade it. So it's part of the, it's part of the grade. So 5% of your grade is based on the quality of your effective failure. That's number one. But more importantly, what it means is that when you make a mistake, don't just move on. Force yourself to hold that mistake, which is really hard because we don't want to admit that we're imperfect, until you actually get an insight and then let it go. And what's interesting is that when the students begin to buy into it, it is so freeing and their work becomes so much richer and stronger. But I have to share with you a mindset. This was just a few days ago in class that one of my favorite students, her name is Sarah, in this class, and I just love her because she says so many great things. So she was talking about failure, and she was saying, the thing I like about effective failure is that, you know, I can do something and, you know, and it's not right. And then here's what she said. And so she goes, you know, I did something and it's incorrect. So then what I do is just try to make it slightly less incorrect. What a great phrase, which I'd never heard before.
Slightly
this is Sarah.
Slightly less incorrect.
And so she said, it lifts the pressure, she said, off me to get it perfect.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be perfect, but just a little bit less incorrect. And the truth is, incrementally, if you keep doing that, you will get it perfect. You will eventually get it perfect. And so I thought that phrase of hers is really capturing what effective failure means. It means that you go from where you are, which is incorrect, and just make it incrementally better, so slightly less incorrect, and then repeat. And you iterate and iterate and iterate, and that practice will lead you to success.
So you said something interesting. I want to follow up on that idea that, you know, these failures, we sweep them under the rug, and because we kind of want everything to go well, and we want to appear capable and perfect. I also think about kind of the flip side of that, where we almost wallow in those failures.
Yes.
And that's it's another way of kind of getting stuck in them, but it's sort of the opposite of, I'm never going to learn math, or I'm never going to be a good driver, or I'm never going to, you know, learn how to cook chicken or whatever the case may be. I don't know.
Chicken.
Well, you know what I mean?
I understand.
Anything that where we don't do well at the beginning. So essentially where we're failing, but we're not doing the next steps. I think that's something that we do also, is just sort of wallow there and go, ugh. I'm never gonna get better at this.
You're so right. And the reason why I'm never thinking that way is because I just try to be as optimistic as I can be. And in fact, I think I'm overly optimistic always. You know, it's not a matter of being the glass half full. The glass is always overflowing in my mind because that's just how I live my life. But it's true that if I put myself in other people's shoes, there are people who will kind of obsess on that and not be able to kind of move off of that. And I don't believe in living in the past. Learning from the past is great, but then not living in it and always being forward thinking. But it's true. If one is not forward thinking, you can kind of be stuck in the mud in kind of an unfortunate way, which I hadn't thought about, but you're right. People will do that.
If you're trying to think of a way to help people embrace this concept of effective failure and moving on and all the things you've been describing, it kind of helps to know where they're coming from. And some people are coming from, oh, that never happened. And some people are coming from a place of, oh, that's all that happens.
Exactly. And so you have to be able to, you have to have the mindful approach of learning and then letting go. So it's two things. So that's a good point. It's not just a matter of learning from the thing, but then it's a matter of, and I always say, once you've learned something, let it go. But that letting go, as you're pointing out, Jennifer, can be challenging for some people who do not want to let go and say, see, I'm not good at that. I can't do it. But instead, the letting go, you're making an excellent point now that I'm thinking about it, is just as important as the learning. So learn something from the mistake and then genuinely let it go.
Well, you've probably encountered students who it's become sort of part of their identity. They're the, oh, I'm no good at math.
Yes, of course.
Or, oh, I'm the supreme math, I was going to say geek or nerd, but that's a positive
thing.
You know,
that's
I'm
fine.
Great at math. And yeah. They sort of get locked in those lanes, if you will.
It's the ones who say, oh, I can't do math, or I hate math. That makes me so sad, because everyone can do math. It's just a matter of whether they want to or not, yeah. And if they want to commit to it. But anyway.
All right. So I'm ready to, speaking of effective failure, let's move on to the puzzle. Puzzler.
Ah, which involves fish. Actually, I don't think anyone's afraid of cooking chicken, but I am afraid of cooking fish because it's so easy to ruin a fish.
Yeah.
So that's the segue, I think. Okay. Let me remind our listeners, this is a very complicated visual puzzler, which involves creating a fish, basically like a catfish or something, out of 8 matches. And the way you do it is you create a square and you put it so that the diagonals are horizontal and vertical, so it's like a diamond. And then you extend the upper left match upwards, so you kind of put what I will call a fin, and then you will extend the corresponding thing, you know, kind of the reflection of that underneath it to create another fin, and then you create a tail by looking at the right vertex of the square and extending 2 matches kind of in that fashion. So you create a fish that's swimming, I guess, in my picture, to the left, that has a tail and 2 fins. You're supposed to move only 3 matches, and by moving only 3 matches with no overlapping, you want the fish to now be swimming in the opposite direction, in my case, to the right.
Okay, So I thought I had a breakthrough here because yes. I'm not going to lie. I struggled with this.
Yes.
One.
Right.
I thought I had a breakthrough, but the fish may have trouble swimming given what I tried to do. So
okay.
You said move 3 matches.
Move 3 matches.
Move 3 matches. So correct. I actually had a way where you only move 2 matches.
And it's swimming the other way?
Well, sort of.
Oh.
This is where we encounter the problem. So this
could,
is why,
with one match, you could sort of be swimming the
well,
other way.
So here was
go
kind
ahead.
Of the very
no, no, no.
simple. So I'm going back to that idea
please.
Of kind of the simplest solution yes. first. So I took the 2 matchsticks that essentially are making the tail.
Yes. So on the right there.
Yes, they're on the right,
yes.
and they form a V and they make the tail. So
yes,
if you just move that tail
oh, to the
over
other,
here,
other side.
So now these are gone. So,
but now the fins are kind
but
of
see that's the
forcing.
Thing is so the fins
and if you move the fins then you've moved 4 so you can definitely
right,
do it moving
so you
4
can move 4 unless
move 3?
Unless the fish can swim,
no,
can
no.
move with the fins
so you
sort
found
of going against
the current you found a way how to reverse the fish in 4 with moving 4 matchsticks is what
yeah.
I look at that
yeah
right so
it's
good.
Not well
and so that's the challenge can you do it with 3 can
3
one less
well apparently the answer to that is no. But I'm trying to learn from my failure the first time.
Right.
But I think I'm onto something, though, and I, or maybe I'm not, because it seemed like flopping the tail to the other side seemed very logical to me
yep.
and very easy, but it does leave you with this conundrum of the other two. So
so that if we had the time to spend to focus on this failed attempt, no,
yeah.
no, I mean, really, then one of the epiphanies that we might come to, which is, I mean, so this is how I did it. So I didn't look at the answer. I figured
uh-huh.
this one out. Someone gave this to me and I did it. But the thing that I learned from this is that obviously the body can't be the same. So you're using the body in like a kind of a
I'm reverse. Keeping it the same.
And
but...
now, so therefore the body must be somewhere else. Now, with that as an insight, now you can start saying, okay, so how do I move the body around? And that becomes now something we can now look at given this failed attempt. Okay, so here's the idea. The idea is you take a fin and a tail that are parallel,
yep.
and you connect their upper parts so that you now have another square, and that's the square that's going to be going the other way. And now what you do is you extend on the side that is opposite the fin, and now you see you actually have the fish going in the opposite direction.
I see.
And so I moved 1, 2, 3.
You did
I
it.
I took away one of the sides of the square, so one of the sides from the body, and then I took the fin and the tail from one of the sides and moved it up.
I think that's
not
a good
the
one
best puzzler, but it was a fun challenging. If you work it out and try it with matchsticks, you can actually figure it out. The thing that you realize is that the body has to move.
Right.
That's the point.
And I think this is also very illustrative as we wind up this episode of thinking about effective failure because those frustration points. So you can either throw up the piece of paper and the pen and go, oh, forget this. I'm not going to do this anymore. Or go, okay, this isn't working. What could I try next?
Right.
Or I've got one idea that's not enough sticks, that's too many sticks, so let me think of something else. It seems to me that what we need to give ourselves is the gift of time.
Yes. And mindfulness, because time and mindfulness go together, and you're absolutely right. So congratulations.
Well, that was fun.
There you go.
Dr. Ed Berger, thank you for giving us many gifts, including mindfulness. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at kut.org. I'm Jennifer Staton, KUT News.